Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross, and I'm thrilled and delighted that this week we're going to be talking to one of the game's great players and one of the game's nice guys. It's West Bromwich Albion's Chris Brunt, or ex-West Brom, but you're still there in the academy, aren't you?
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Just little bits and pieces, bit of part-time, just sort of dipping my toe in the other side of football. I think the last year or so when I went to Bristol City, it was a bit difficult with the whole COVID thing with no fans in the stadium. I really struggled with that, like, and I sort of lost a bit of love for playing, to be totally honest. And you know, it's sort of keeping me involved without sort of the full-time commitment of it at the minute. So it's nice to be able to be at home and spend a bit of time with the family and do some sort of normal things that I've never really had the chance to over the last 20 years. So that's the nicest thing about it for me at the minute.
588 games, 73 goals. I mean, to fall out after that, that's a long time, because you've had a long career, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm...
20 years nearly.
20 years, near best part of 20 years, yeah. Look, I think... my lucky stars. I'm very, very lucky to have been able to be involved in such a high level of football for that long. And, you know, lots of people want to have that and they don't get the opportunity to. So, you know, I'm very grateful for it. And, you know, I enjoyed more or less every moment of it. You know, some of them are difficult, but, you know, it's something maybe in the next few years I'll look back on with, you know, a bit more pride than probably I do right at this minute, still coming out the other end.
23 managers in 19 years. You've seen off a lot of managers.
Yeah, no, we just said that, didn't we? I think that's maybe why West Brom didn't give me another year, just in case it was costing them too much getting rid of all the managers. But no, I think that's the way football's gone, hasn't it? You know, if you know, all of a sudden, if you don't get four or five results on the spin, like
you're under pressure,
exactly. So, you know, look, I think if one positive I can look at that is, like, for all the managers that I was there under, majority of them played me
played
most weeks, so yeah,
that's a big acid test.
I must have been doing something right. I was either doing something right or I was doing something really wrong, so I'd like to think it was something right.
But it brings its own problem. I mean, you say it's football, but 23 managers, 19 years, all those different voices, different ideas, different philosophies. How difficult for a player is that to continually adjust to what a new manager wants or says?
Yeah, I'd imagine some lads find it really difficult. I think probably looking back at, after you just saying that, that's probably one of my strengths, that I was able to sort of adapt. You know, I was able to play a few different positions as well. It's probably helped me. And look, it's a challenge, isn't it? At the end of the day, at a club like West Brom, being in the Premier League for so long like we were, it was a challenge every week to try and get a result to stay in the league. And I mean, if one manager, like, you can see very quickly that one manager's philosophy might not necessarily work for a club like West Brom, and you quickly adapt the new manager's philosophy if you think it's gonna get you some results. And at the end of the day, it's a results based business, and nobody wants to go home on a Saturday after losing a game, you know. So that's you do what you're told if it's getting you results.
What's the secret of your longevity as a player? What's the secret? A lot of players don't do it.
Yeah, no. Look, I think. I looked after myself reasonably well. I think when I had the knee injury in 2016, I think that probably helped me in the long run. Obviously, it was missing out in the European Championships for Northern Ireland, but I think probably at the other end of my career, it probably extended it by another two or three seasons. Basically, gave me a lot of time to work on some stuff in the gym, and it made me probably think a lot more about that side of the game rather than just going out and training and playing football. You know, once you get a bit older, you've got to do a lot of stuff on the other side as well, and you know, I think that definitely helped me.
And I think you're not a party animal, are you? You're not one of them. No, you're not a bad lad. You're not sneaking out of windows, getting ratted. I mean, you've been, you've seen that, I'm sure. But you've been, I suppose, I hate to use the word, but you've been like, for a manager, you've been a model pro, haven't you? You've been good for managers.
Yeah, look, I think you have to be a model pro nowadays. I think the days of sneaking out windows and going to the pub after training up until Thursday, they're long gone. You know, you can't do that anymore. You can't. To perform at the highest level, and even more so now. It's 2018 was the last time I played in the Premier League, and dropping back down to the Championship as well, like, it's so tough, it's so fast, so physical, and if you're not in decent condition physically, you're going to get found out. And you know, I think towards the back end of my career, I appreciate that a lot more. I tried to look after myself a lot better off the pitch. You know, I like to have a beer, I like to come and play, have a game of golf. Like, obviously we're sitting in the golf club today, but that's about the height of it, really. You know, I'm not a massive one for going out in town, staying out late. I like to be at home in my own house, in my own bed. You know, it sounds a bit boring, but that's just the way I am. That's the way I've always been.
which is probably why you had 20 years in the game. That's the reason, to be fair. Let's be honest. That's
yeah, well, I hope so, yeah. Hopefully, looking back on it, I've reaped the benefits of going to bed at 10:30 at night. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about a boy growing up in Northern Ireland, Belfast. How tough was that?
Look, it could have been a lot tougher for other people than it was for me. You know, we lived in the south side of Belfast, and so like we didn't see a massive amount of a lot of the other stuff that was going on around in Northern Ireland at the time. But you know, look, a lot of my family members have been police officers in the past as well, so you know a lot of stuff what goes on and things like that. So look, I think it's the same as anywhere. You know, look, everywhere's got places that are you sort of avoid and you try and stay away from. But I think when you're from that place, you know, it's never as bad when you're there as it looks from the outside. Obviously, the media always portrays like stuff a lot worse than what it probably actually is. And at the end
like
of the
day, a war zone.
Yeah, like a war zone, exactly. And you know, like the stuff you might hear on the radio in Birmingham or on the news in Birmingham, like somebody's been shot, this, that, and the other. You know, it's like, you know, it was part and parcel. And I think if you're from Belfast and you're from Northern Ireland, you sort of just got on with it. Like, you know, look, obviously, I didn't see massive. It was a lot worse before I was growing up, and look, I was very lucky in the way we were brought up and the areas we were brought up in. But you know, look, I played football with a lot of lads from West Belfast, from the Shankill, from the Falls, and like, you know, I think football probably helped as well. You know, it brings people together, doesn't
it? Great bridge, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, and especially at home as well. You know, like, I mean, there's generations after generations in Northern Ireland, like Protestants and Catholics, that they're brought up not to like each other. And you know, I think once you start playing football and you see lads getting together and able to play football like that, it really, really helps stuff like that, I think.
Yeah, be a good teammate, because I mean, I relate to what you're saying, because my mum's from Belfast and I heard stories and from my gran and about what they're, and having been to Belfast when the troubles were at their height, you know, I went there in trepidation, scared to death, but for most of the time, it's just a normal place.
Oh yeah, look, and now, look, if anybody's going to Belfast, it's a great place. It's a great city. It's like, it's got so much going for it, and you know, obviously off the back of all the COVID stuff, you know, people are starting to go back there, and the bars, restaurants, the food's amazing. There's loads of stuff. Obviously, Titanic. It's big on the golf scene as well. You know, obviously we've got famous golfers, so it is a great place. Like, but you know, obviously everywhere's got a past, hasn't it? You know, and you know, thankfully, I think Northern Ireland's probably come out of the worst of it, like, and it's a good place to go at the moment.
A boy growing up, St Andrews Boys Club, I think it was. Was it always your dream to be a pro footballer?
Oh yeah, every moment of the day from when I was about 4 or 5 years old. Yeah, I'd my family, it was similar. Most people are similar at home. Like my granny she lived about 5 minute walk from our house, and so mum and dad were working, and we used to go to my granny's in the morning, go to school, and then all the cousins would sort of meet there. And I had one older cousin, and he was 7, and he was a big Man United fan. You know, he loved his football, and you know, obviously I sort of looked up to him. He was 7 years older than me, so he sort of, once we started playing in the back garden of my granny's house, I was always into it. And you know, played out in the street around the corner from mum and dad's, which obviously kids don't really get the opportunity to do that anymore. And I get it, because like I've got two kids of my own, and I wouldn't want them playing out in the street playing football with cars coming about, because I think with generally society, you're a lot more protective of people nowadays than maybe what your generation's probably used to, a lot worse than what mine was, or not worse, but if that makes sense, you're probably a lot more streetwise. Kids aren't just as streetwise anymore, so you know, that's probably where I learned to play football in the street with my pals. And you know, I loved it from morning to night. If I could have got a ball booting it off my mum's fence, she went mad a few times, but you know, it was worth it in the end, I think.
Brilliant. Yeah. You went to college. That'll surprise a lot, but you went to college.
Yeah.
What was your aim? Was it sort of like get something in the back room just in case you didn't make it as a pro?
No, look, my mum and dad were always big on school. Like my mum especially, like she. I always enjoyed school. I was quite good in school as well. I think I've got 9 GCSEs, and then obviously once you move away full time, Middlesbrough, you as a trainee, you have to go into a college scheme, and we did like a sports science degree at Middlesbrough College as well. And like I sort of went out of my way to finish it, because I'd been released by Middlesbrough already, and I thought, well, I was obviously not sure what was going to happen, so I sort of went back a few times on days off when I was at Sheffield Wednesday to make sure I finished the course. And I always remember the welfare guy at Middlesbrough like sending my mum and dad obviously a letter after I'd finished it, and saying like how pleased he was that I'd actually knuckled down and done it, because I could have just sacked it off, obviously. But look, you never know what's around the corner, do you? And it's nice to have something to fall back on. Like thankfully, I've not really had to use any of it. But you know, you just never know. So, well, I think that comes from my mum and dad. Really, they instilled that into us. Yeah, like school was always very important.
I suppose you mentioned Northern Ireland, you mentioned Belfast and football in the same sentence, and immediately George Best springs to mind. Was it the same for you?
Oh yeah, massively. Obviously, I never got to see him play. We had videos and growing up, like
there, sensational, by the way.
Yeah, and you see all the stuff that I think there was a. My nana used to love him as well. Like she always used to talk about him, and because she had a soft spot for Man United as well. So like, they had the George Best story. I think it was just the VHS. It was like an autobiography,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it? Only
right,
on video. Yeah. So it had his testimony and stuff, and we used to just constantly watch it on repeat. I think my cousin or my uncle might actually had a signed copy of it as well.
Wow.
On the inside, on the little slip. Do you remember plastic that you pulled out and slipped it in?
The paper came
it
out.
It was a signed one, yeah. So it's pretty, we don't have that actually. I don't know where it's gone to, but
I've got the same with Jimmy Johnston from Celtic.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah.
Just little things like that, you know, and you never really think much of it when you're a kid, but like obviously that's sort of, I was a Man United fan growing up, and that sort of just, yeah, that probably instilled it. It was from my granny and my big cousin that were Man United fans.
He has a big link with West Brom, of course. George Best, because he played, his debut was against West Brom.
Oh yes, it was, and he tore somebody's strips off, went down one side.
He wrote a letter to his mum.
Yeah,
and I've seen a copy of the letter saying, "Dear mum, everything's going with da 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 da. Mr. Busby has told me I'll be playing tomorrow. Told me I'll be playing last week, and I played against West Bromwich Albion." And they had a lunatic right back called Graham Williams.
Graham Williams, that's right. Yeah. And George
could terrorise anybody.
He gave him a torrid time, didn't he? I always remember that, yeah.
And I think Graham did what he did best and just smashed him.
Yeah. And did they move him over to the other side of the pitch after that or something as well? Yeah, I vaguely remember reading that, yeah.
So, but tell me...
He wouldn't have got away with that now, Graham. I don't think you're not allowed to tackle anyone now, yeah.
He'd have been set up in the tunnel, Graham. He was tough. And a great guy as well. Welsh, top player. Moving from Northern Ireland to England at a young age, I think 16 or 17.
16, yeah.
How tough was that and adjusting in England?
Oh, yeah, it was really tough. I mean, like I said, like, my family were always really supportive of me, and that was probably the hardest time. And to be fair, I was close to coming back. I was pretty homesick. Like, my mum and dad,
as George Best did.
Yeah, well, I think every kid from Northern Ireland does, you know. I think a lot of kids from Belfast as well probably don't, you know. Football's probably the only way of sort of leaving Belfast, if that makes sense.
I'm sure
it's the same a lot of places, but then obviously a lot of them are not used to being away from home, and then they sort of, the draw of going back home is just too much. So I'd been going over it. I used to go to Glasgow Rangers, Man United a few times when I was a kid, and I'd been used to sort of being away. But obviously, being away permanently, you don't really think much about it. But look, mum and dad were really supportive. My brother and my sister were a lot younger than me, but the family we live with in Middlesbrough were absolutely brilliant. Like, if it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't have made it out. You know, they proper looked after me. They looked after my mum and dad, my family when they came over. My girlfriend's my wife now. Obviously, when she came over, they just made us feel at home, and they were just the nicest people, and if it hadn't been for them, it would have been probably a lot different.
So who was your inspiration then as that young man, you know, before you came to England and when you were, who was your inspiration?
Like I said, I was always a Man United fan growing up, and being left-sided, Ryan Giggs was my favourite player growing up. Him and Eric.
Not a bad choice, to be
fair. Yeah, he did all right, didn't he? But I mean, Eric Cantona as well, like that sort of era was my, was probably as I sort of proper love football, like, you know, sort of back end of Mark Hughes, people like that. So and then you moved on with your Beckhams and your Scholeses and stuff like that. So, and then obviously when I'm a bit older in my career, I had the opportunity to play against them at Old Trafford, and you know, I didn't collect many shirts for my career, but the couple that I've got, one of them's a Ryan Giggs one, and he signed it for me, and it's up in a frame in my house, and that's pretty much the only one that I've really kept, because I think stuff like that sort of, it, you know, it's easy to swap a shirt every game, and then it just lies in a wardrobe somewhere, doesn't it? You know, so I always tried to just swap with people, like friends of mine that I played with or against, and ones that actually mean something to me. And obviously, that probably means a lot to me, because he was my favourite.
It's not a bad one to have, I've got to be honest. Got everything in the game and more. I mean,
yeah, no, looking
like yourself had a long career, by the way.
You know, a ridiculously long career, and at the level he did as well. You know, it's sort of, I think you. No, times like that, you'll not see too many more like that, I don't think.
So, you're moving from Ireland. How come you didn't get a chance at Middlesbrough? I mean, I hate to use the words, what went wrong, but they must have seen something to take you there.
Yeah, look, I did really well. Rangers released me as a schoolboy when I was about. Just,
so you were at Rangers.
I used to go to Rangers pretty much every school holiday, from the age of 11 right through to 16. And then as I was 16, they used to bring me over weekends to play games and stuff. And the last time I was over was Easter, just before I did my GCSE. So that would have been 2001. And we trained for a few days, played Celtic on the Sunday, and I was all right against it. I didn't play overly well. I scored, but I didn't have a great game. Yeah. Like, and you sort of. And I came back on the Sunday night, and I said, the guy was dropping me at the airport, and I said, oh, well, because I was always under the impression that I was going there for full time in July, and I said, oh, do you know what's going on? Like, are you going to sort something out for July? And he said, oh, well, yeah, I'm not sure yet, we'll be in touch. Because I had signed, like, a letter of agreement when I was 10, which meant they were going to offer me a YTS.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, obviously, the people had changed at the club. Walter Smith was the manager then. He left, and then Dick Advocaat came in, and they sort of filtered all the Dutch people down. And obviously, they just didn't fancy me. And so on the Tuesday, my dad phoned. He still hadn't heard anything. On the Tuesday, my dad phoned him and said, look, what's going on? Because obviously, he needs to know. Like, and they said, oh, look, we're not going to take him. And luckily enough, the guy that was the Middlesbrough scouting on and lived around the corner from mom and dad, and he'd been on at me to go to Middlesbrough for ages because it was such a good setup at the time, and he said you should come over and have a look, and he booked me straight on the following week because it was Easter holidays. So I went there for a week in Easter holidays, trained a couple of times, and literally on about the third day the academy director pulled me and he said, look, we're really impressed, we'd like to offer you a contract. And you know, you don't really think much of it. You're just sort of getting on with it. Like, and obviously, I was in the middle of doing my GCSEs, and I had loads in my mind as well. And then they brought us back over a couple of weeks later with mom and dad, and they just sort of set the contract down in front of you. And they were like, oh, and my dad was like, well, there you go, you're going to sign it. Like, and I was like, yeah, all right. But then
no agent,
no, enough. Mom and dad were there. Yeah, no, I probably could have got myself an extra 50 quid a week, and if my dad had tried a bit harder, but he didn't. And then just went from there. Like, I sort of hit the ground running at Middlesbrough as well. I did really well in the first pre-season. Obviously, I was knackered because I had never trained sort of at that level before. And being at home, you sort of part-time, whereas those lads are training maybe 3 or 4 nights a week with the academy. So I was a little bit behind fitness-wise. But when it came to the games, I did well in the games. And I got a couple of reserve team appearances and stuff. And then, obviously, you get a bit older and you sort of... Obviously, your mates at home are going out on a Saturday night in the beer and you're sort of talking to them. And you end up... I probably just got a little bit... It probably just caught up with me, I think, everything. You know, moving away from home, the full-time training of it all, I just got a bit tired. And then back end of the season, I sort of struggled first year. And then the start of the second season, I fractured my ankle in pre-season and never really got up to speed the second season. But although we did get to the Youth Cup final, and we got beaten in the Youth Cup final by Man United. So that was a good achievement. I scored a couple of goals in that. But I was sort of, Stuart Downing was a year above me, so he's only a few months older than me, but he was always a year ahead of me, and obviously he was the golden boy. And right, look, he was a good player, top player, nice, great kid as well, like, great fella. He was brilliant with me when we were there. Still be like in touch with him the odd time here and now and again. And Adam Johnson was a year below as well, so you know, he sort of, I think it was just, they sort of make a decision, I think football clubs do, based on the future, and then they obviously fancied those two a bit more than they did me, which is fair enough, like, because, I mean, it's all opinions.
It happens in the game. It's only opinions. That's all it is.
Of course it is, yeah. And, like, I say this to all the young lads that I come across now. Like, it is all... Just because somebody's not fancying this week, he might be the flavour of the month next month. You know, it is just the way it is. But the Middlesbrough were brilliant with me as well when they released me. They let me know maybe 4 or 5 weeks before they sort of told all the other lads, because I think the academy director and the youth team manager were pretty keen for me to stay. They thought I should be given a contract, and Steve McLaren was the manager at the time, and his staff obviously didn't feel like that. So, I mean, and that's fair enough as well. So I went training with Darlington for a couple of weeks, and Dave Hodgson was Darlington manager, and he was friends with Mark Proctor, who was my youth team manager.
Yeah.
And so I trained there for a couple of weeks. I absolutely loved it. It was brilliant. We trained at like a place called Maiden Castle Durham. And it was like proper, like old school. It was like leisure centre training room, changing rooms, like wash your own kit. Like, it was class. And he was really keen to sign me. And I went for a week's trial to Cardiff and got down there. And I really didn't like it when I went. I think we trained on a school gym, like, you know, the wooden floors with the
That'd be the old Ninian Park then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was Ninian Park, but they didn't have a training ground. So we were bussing everywhere. I was staying in like a guest house. And not that, obviously, that was. Nothing against the guest house, but I just didn't enjoy it at all, and I couldn't wait to get back to Darlington, to be honest. Then I went down to Sheffield Wednesday on the Monday, sort of Chris Turner and Mark Proctor played together at Sheffield Wednesday, and then just it all just went from there. Like, and played a couple of reserve games, did well in the reserve games, and they took my contract over till the end of the season.
That was a. It turned out to be a really good move for you, because I think your first full season you won the promotion, didn't you?
Oh, look, Sheffield Wednesday was absolutely brilliant there. I wouldn't change.
How big a club is that, by the way?
Massive club. I think that was one of the things that struck me as well. You know, I played one of my first games in Hillsborough, and it was empty, obviously, for a reserve game. But, you know, when you just walk out in the pitch at Hillsborough and you go, wow, that's just unbelievable. And coming from a Premier League club like Middlesbrough, thinking, oh, well, I'm sort of needing to drop down a little bit. Yeah. And you go into a club like Sheffield Wednesday, you're not really dropping down, if that makes sense. Obviously, you're dropping down a few levels.
Division, but not in club stature.
Exactly, yeah, not in club stature. And it was and then I got on the bench a couple of times. And then and there was like 22,000 people in a league. It was Division 2 then. It was like, so that's that's League 1 now.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, when you're sort of like, wow, this is amazing. And just, I loved every minute of it. And then in the summer, we had a big clear out. They brought a lot of lads in, they let a lot of lads go, and like those are probably some of my best pals in football from then. Like, we were all sort of in the same boat still, lads that I speak to all the time, and no, it was brilliant.
2007, you'd done well, so why did you move on? I mean, because I seem to remember your contract talks broke down.
Yeah, I'd played a couple of games. Well, West Brom had just been relegated the season before. I was still at Sheffield Wednesday, and then we played them at Hillsborough, and we battered them at Hillsborough. Like, we played really, really well. And I played well in the Hillsborough game. And then we played West Brom back end of the season. It was a Friday night at the Hawthorns. And we beat them again. We won 1-0. Dion Burton scored. And I'd done really well in the game as well. I think I was on the telly and I got a man of the match. And, you know, sort of... Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday had sort of... You know, it was a bit weird because, you know, at the time, the owner wasn't overly liked by the fans, and it was a bit of it could get a bit nasty, the atmosphere sometimes at Hillsborough, and not through any fault of the players or the fans, I don't think, you know, just sort of they weren't too sure what was going on. And that summer they let a lot of lads go, like obviously lads that were good players and friend I was friendly with as well. And you know, I just think the lads they brought in probably weren't as good as the lads they were letting go, and I just got a bit annoyed, and they sort of threw me under the bus a little bit, to be totally honest. With the sort of whole contract thing, you know, obviously they offered me a contract, I turned it down, and then they came out and said, oh, I was asking for too much money. And that was never really the case. Like, you know, it was just sort of, I think they knew they were going to sell me.
You were a popular player, they needed an excuse for you going.
Yeah, well, I think so. Well, the excuse for us going was the club was in financial ruin, I think, at the time. And, you know, at the end of the day, back then, I think they got 2.5 million quid.
Nearly 3 million for you.
£3 million for me. And, you know, I think back then that was probably
massive
money for to go from a championship club to another championship club as well, you know. So look, I think in the long run it's worked out well for everybody. You know, they got good money for me, and obviously I've been able to go on at West Brom and have the career I did. Look, it's probably, it was never ideal, but I think when, you know, when things like that happen, you know, you can see nowadays, like, if the player sort of, you have to sort of become a bit of public enemy number one, really, to try and get your move through sometimes. And unfortunately, that's what had to happen. But any time I've been back since, the fans have been brilliant with me.
Then it was West Brom. I've had that in a moment, but I always wanted to talk to you, because when I've watched you play, I mean, you've always been 100% fit. But were you ever rapid? You've never really... Because you had this wonderful ability, and Bomber and I have talked about it many times. You don't have to get by somebody. You've got this ability to whip a ball around him. Yeah. I mean, that is a real talent.
Yeah. I think when I was a kid, I was really quick. I always remember my boy.
We'd need proof.
Yeah. There will be proof somewhere. Like, but I was really quick when I was a kid. Yeah. And I had that Osgood Slatters, you know, the groin injury that a lot of kids get it. And I think it sort of just affected my pace a little bit when I was about 14, probably.
Did you need an up for that?
No, I didn't need an up, but I just remember, like, being in real pain. My dad had to carry me up the stairs one night. I couldn't even get up the stairs. I was only, like, 13-year-old, yeah. So, you know, I had to have a few months out of football, and I never really had that same pace afterwards. So then you have to adapt, don't you? Like, I was always good with the ball. My left foot was... always my strongest weapon. Like, so,
don't be modest. It was a wand.
No, and I mean, I'm not bad. I could always use my right foot as well. Like, so, technically, I was always a decent player. And you find a way of getting things done. I think, like, a lot of professional sports people will do that. You know, if things aren't exactly what you think, you'll find a way of winning games. It's the same with teams. It's the same with individuals. You'll find a way of getting the job done. And I think that's what I had to do. But I always had a sort of like half a yard in my head as well. You sort of, if you read the game well enough, you can sort of, you know, if you, I don't know, if I'm playing left midfield and there's a fullback overlapping, it sort of buys you half a yard to then be able to whip the ball and stuff like that. So, look, it was.
I've talked to some of the strikers you played with, and they all say the same thing. When you were playing, they were never frightened to gamble because they knew it was coming.
Yeah, well, that's. I always thought that. I mean, I think you always pride yourself at your job, and crossing was a big strength of mine from when I was a kid. Like set pieces, dead balls, whatever it was, move, like as you say, using fullbacks and sort of crossing it as well. Like so, and I was fortunate enough as well. If it wasn't on to cross my left, I could probably put a half decent ball on my right as well. So I was never afraid to do that too, which helped. But I think as I've played as a forward, like back in the youth teams and the old time at Sheffield Wednesday when we were down the bare bones, they used to stick me up front. And like, do you know when somebody's about to cross it and you gamble and then it doesn't come in the box? I think it must be frustrating as a striker. So I always used to think, well, I'll try my best not to do that. Like, but I always remember the lads saying that to put it in early. The earliest you can put it in, it gives the keeper less time to come for it, gives the defenders less time to set, and the lads that you're playing with know it's coming, so they've sort of got a bit of an advantage, haven't they?
And of course, less time for them to be caught offside. So there's all sorts of advantages. What was your first impressions of West Brom?
Well, he didn't let me in to the game. I think I've told that story a few times. Like, I went down to watch a League Cup game on the Tuesday night, and then I signed on the Wednesday, I think.
So they wouldn't let you in?
We played Bournemouth on the Tuesday night, and I've turned up with a pair of jeans and trainers on, and they wouldn't let me into the corporate bit. And they had the phone through to Jeremy Peace to say, like, is he all right to come in jeans? And he was like, yeah, he's all right to come in jeans. He's signing tomorrow. And they were like, all right, okay. So that wasn't a good start. But then the next morning, we stayed in the hotel. Me and my agent stayed overnight just up the road from the training ground, and next day went in. Agent went with Jeremy and Mark Jenkins, and obviously tried to get some blood out of the stones, like, you know.
That did test his ability.
Tested his ability, yeah. But obviously he'd done James Morrison's deal a couple of weeks before as well, so he sort of, I think he had he had a decent relationship with both of them, I think, so it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But and I spent the morning just with Tony Mowbray, just wandering around the training ground, like having a chat about football, had a cup of tea, and obviously you know what Tony's like. Yeah. He's football mad, nicest guy in the world, like
tremendous,
proper football man, like, and like, I had a lot of respect from him from where go and how much he wanted me to come and play in his football team, and he was telling me what he thought I could do.
Interrupting you, how important is that when the manager's really desperate to get you?
That's the only time I've ever really had that, because, you know, sort of Sheffield Wednesday, I've been released from Middlesbrough, and like Sheffield Wednesday, they weren't doing me a favour, but they were sort of they give me an opportunity, so then it was up to me to go and do it. But you know, when somebody's paying that much money for you, that shows how much they actually want you at the football club. And obviously Jeremy wasn't daft neither, he was a very shrewd
very astute
businessman, and obviously I was an asset, I was a young player going to the football club as well, so it sort of fitted both things. And I'd played well in the two games against West Brom, and Tony had remembered that, and that's what he talked about those games and how what stuff I'd done in the games, and you know, he just made me feel that I was wanted there.
It was a fantastic time as well, a promotion, and I think you effectively won promotion with a goal against Southampton, if I remember.
It was an unbelievable season. Like, I probably didn't play as much football as I would have wanted to, because I'd been used to playing 44, 45 games a season at Sheffield Wednesday. So sort of Tony tinkered a little bit. He used a bit of a squad rotation, wasn't he, in that? And
we Arsenal had, were his ideal. I used to call West Brom then an Arsenal tribute.
It's probably a fair thing, like, but obviously we had Zoltan Gera, myself, Robbie Coren, John O'Greening, Mazza, Philip Teixeira, do you remember the little Portuguese guy? So there was loads of people trying to get in the team, and it was difficult. Obviously Kev Phillips was up front, Ishmael Miller, it was really like, and you know, there were senior lads in the squad that, you know, Kevin Phillips obviously had an unbelievable career and he was coming to the end of it then, but for me to go and train with people like that, with no disrespect to Sheffield Wednesday, it was another level for me as well. So it took me a wee while to get going as well. Like, you know, obviously I knew Jono from Middlesbrough, who's like obviously the nicest fella ever, that thick as
not the brightest,
daft as a brush, like, but what a guy though. Like, for to go into a new football club as a new person, to have somebody that came there, it was absolutely brilliant. Paul Robinson proper looked after me as well. You know, obviously Robbo's got a bit of a hard man thing, like, and he was obviously on the pitch, he was a hard guy, but you know,
he loved to tackle,
but on the pitch and in training and that, he proper helped me as well. You know, during the games when sometimes it wasn't maybe going my way, he proper looked after me. Like, and they tested you obviously in training. You know, they took the piss out of you a little bit, and like, you know, if you weren't doing it right, they were like, "Oh, maybe why have we paid all this money for you?" And all that.
Just just stop there a second, because that is such an important thing. It's frowned on these days because that's almost classed as bullying.
Yeah.
And yet it helped you.
Oh, yeah. Look, of course. Like, I think, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if you can't, if you need some, if somebody's telling you how great you are every week, what happens next week if you're not great, you know, like, and somebody's telling you how bad you are, like, you have to be able to sort of be on a level, an even keel, if you know what I mean. Like, I think I always found that, like, if somebody told me I was great one week, it sort of, you didn't go, oh, well, I'm great. Like, you sort of went, all right, thanks very much, and you just moved
in
on.
In your mind, you think next week.
Like, next week, right, well, that's a challenge, isn't it? It's a challenge to be good again next week.
Yeah.
And you've got to find a level of consistency, and, like, at the end of the day, you see, how many players do you see, especially, well, not necessarily yourself, because obviously you only see, like, a match day, or you might see a little bit of training here or there, but you train with people every day, and you see people in training that are unbelievable, and then it comes to match day and they can't do it, you know, and then obviously people are saying to them, well, why can't you do this on a match day that you're doing every day in training? And you know, you've got to find that balance, and
it is different.
It's very different now, and especially now I feel for young kids now, because obviously with social media and Instagram and whatnot, and you know, they've got to look good on there, but then obviously the world can have access to that, you know, like people,
and everybody's got an opinion,
and everybody's got an opinion, and like football fans are a fickle bunch, aren't they? You know, they can be nasty as well. Like, and you know, if somebody's saying, so a young lad's played really well and they've broken in the first team, played really well, scored a goal, next week might be hopeless because he's a young lad. Like, you know, that's what's going to happen.
Adrenaline in the first game, exactly, second game. Yeah.
And so if he's bad, and every people on social media are saying, oh, well done, what a great player, oh, you're brilliant, this and that, next week they're telling him he's rubbish. Like, you know, like, you know, it's like an emotional roller coaster, isn't it?
But it is important. I mean, you got stick on the training ground, but if. And it's this is only a personal view, but I think that's great. And I know they frown upon it now, but I think it's great, because if you can't take the stick on the training ground, you're going to walk into an arena with 25,000-30,000 people all giving you a stick. Yeah. So you've got to be able to accept that.
You've got to be able to make mistakes and learn from them quickly. Like, you know, you've got to be able to make a mistake and then think, right, that's gone. Like, I mean, I love golf. That's like, at the minute, that's my thing. And you know, I've been lucky enough to, like, see a lot of professional golf and speak to a couple of pros and stuff, and that's what they do. You know, they do something wrong, it's gone, like, it's finished, and that's the way football.
Move on.
That's the way football players have to be, especially in an arena like that. You've got to block out everything that's going on around you, because you will make bad passes, you will make bad decisions, because it's 100 mph. There's 22 people trying to make the right decision every time, and it's never going to happen. It's a game of mistakes, and how you deal with the mistakes is almost what makes you a better player. You know, it's not. Everybody makes mistakes. It's how you react to them makes you the player you are, I think.
Interesting philosophy, because I often think as well, similar, that for 90 minutes, 22 players are making decisions. Mm. The ones who make the more right decisions usually win the game. That's the way it'll be. But how do you train? How do you have tactics? How do you have a formation? How do you do anything to legislate for 22 brains making decisions?
Well, you don't. Obviously, that's what a manager's there for. Isn't it? You've got to all be making the decisions that he wants you to make, haven't you? And that's why it's, you know, you can have a team full of players that just do exactly what the manager say, but then it becomes a bit monotonous, probably becomes a bit boring to watch. Like, you know, obviously, like, Tony Pulis was very much like, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, and if you don't do it, you won't play.
Yep, simple as.
And which is fair enough when your team's struggling in the bottom Premier League, if you know, right, bang, 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 we're going to get results, we'll stay up, and that's your job, and that's his job. But then, obviously, to get a bit better, you have to fit a few sort of more individuals in that can win you a game, can do something a bit different. Exactly, I think it's all fine. It comes down to that balance as well. And not even every week. It's like week on week, isn't it? Like, you've got to make the right... As a manager, it must be difficult to make the right decision every week to put the right players in the team to win that actual game. You know, it's a tough, tough job.
You... Relegation, top scorer, I think, player of the year, even in relegation. Then promotion again the season after. And again, a vital goal at Doncaster, one of the goals that won promotion.
Obviously, when we got relegated, Tony left and Robbie Di Matteo came in. And look, we had obviously spoke with Jeremy how astute he was as an owner and as a businessman. We were fortunate, we were able to keep majority of the squad. You know, the people were only leaving if it was right for the football club. And look, we went down in the Championship from the Premier League with arguably the strongest squad there, ourselves in Newcastle, and you know, it was an enjoyable season. You know, fortunate, scored a lot of goals. Graham Dorans, obviously, that season was on fire. There was a lot of goals from midfield, and Roman Bednar, people like that. And yeah, look, I don't think it was ever really an uncomfortable season. You know, you always felt you were going to get promoted, like, and to get promoted back up. And you know, just scored, obviously the goal I scored at Doncaster was great, and you know, I never, that one sort of gets glossed over a little bit, doesn't it? Because obviously the Southampton goal from the first season I was there, which sort of that effectively got us promoted, whereas the sort of the Doncaster goal was just one of three that three, day. Yeah.
But it's still promotion. Roberto Di Matteo, who I got on great with, he moved on. Roy Hodgson came in and made you captain. How big a deal was that for you?
I think I might have been captain a couple of times when Robbie was manager as well. He'd spoken to me a couple of times about maybe becoming captain, like, you know, because Scott Carson was captain, and obviously he was in goals. And I don't know, he said, I think it was after the season we got promoted, he said, I think you've done really well this season, I think I can see you being a captain. I was like, you don't really think much of it at the time, do you? I've never really been captain, or, you know, you sort of, I was always in the opinion that everybody should be sort of some sort of leader on the pitch anyway. Yeah. Like, I think that makes a good team. Excuse me. Then when Roy came in, Scott Carson had been dropped, I think, and Boaz was playing in goals, and he said to me, look, Chris, you're going to be captain. And Jonas Olsen was vice captain at the time, and I'm not sure, I don't think he really wanted to be captain at the time, and I said, all right, no problem.
He was focused on his game, though, Jonas. I mean, he was his game.
Oh, man. The nicest guy in the world.
Top man.
Most horrible man.
Talented guitarist as well.
Yeah. Horrible guy on the pitch. Nicest fella in the world after, off it. Like, he, top fella. A lot of time for Jonas. But, Roy came in and made me captain. It just sort of stuck. You know, I always said, look, if he thought somebody else would be better for it, I did that every manager that came in. Said, look, if you've got somebody else that would be better, think you're better for the job, it's your team, it's up to you, I'm part of your team. Like, and obviously the only person that changed it was Tony Pulis when he came in. He made Darren Fletcher captain. Yeah. But look, Roy was unbelievable. Like, in my career at football, Roy was the main one that I learnt so much about. He made me a better player. He made me understand football a lot more.
That right, he actually made you a better player.
He made me a better player all round. I think, you know, I think you sort of appreciated your job in the team, and you could have dropped any one of Roy's players, you could have dropped anywhere in the team, put them as a right back.
He believed in drilling, didn't he? Drill after drill.
It could be monotonous sometimes as well, but the lads, like, he was good with it as well, though. Do you know, like, he had a lot of respect from everybody all around the training ground, everywhere. He was a nice man as well off the pitch. I mean, capable of talking about all sorts of stuff, not just football. You know, he could switch off, and I think everybody just had a lot of respect for him, and they just did what he said, and it helped me massively as a player. It made me able to, probably as I went on in my career, probably able to play a few different positions as well.
Mm. Was there an incident with Cesc Fabregas?
Oh, he hit me in the head with the ball. Oh, that was a while ago. I think Tony Pulis was the manager then. I can't really remember much about it. It was a good shot. Like, he was about 40 yards when he hit me in the back of the head with the ball, and he got sent off. But Chelsea had already won the league, hadn't they? And we'd already stayed up. So, but it meant we beat Chelsea 3-0 that night. So that was good. But I always remember Darren Fletcher and him always had a little bit of. They must have had a bit of history from when he was at Man United and Arsenal or something, and Fletch was raging. I always remember Fletch being absolutely raging about it. And I was like, well, I'm not really that bothered, like, you know, but he was fuming. But I took it well, no, I didn't follow him.
And then there was, I think you got hit with a coin and stuff, and I mean, you were having a great time, but I suppose these were they niggles rather than major?
Yeah, look, obviously the coin incident's.
That's dangerous,
that's,
by the way.
That's not nice, is it? No. You know, I think at the time I was furious, and, like, obviously we were well within my rights to be furious, but I think that's the one thing in 13 years that really annoyed me more than anything. You know, I think obviously the guy, whoever threw it, I don't think it's ever been sort of found or whatever, but they're not proper football fans, are they? You
absolutely.
Know, and I think. It was at a time we weren't doing very well as a team, and I think it was just wrong place, wrong time. But there's no excuse for that. Obviously, if you did that in the street, you'd be getting taken in by the police. Like, so, you know, that's.
How tough was that? How tough was that injury? How tough was the injury?
Yeah, it was tough. Like, obviously, that happened the week after the coin incident as well. So it was a pretty bad week. Obviously, I've gone away from Northern Ireland from when I was 19 till 2004, I think I made my debut, and we qualified in 2015, and you know, there've been some really tough international trips. Like we weren't great, and when we actually did well and then qualified, did really well. Obviously, there's a big hype around the country, and then to get an injury like that and miss out in the tournament was gutting. Like, it's one of the things obviously that I'll regret most about my career. But you know, what can you do? I was always pretty lucky with injuries. You know, for that amount of time I spent at West Brom, I was always available for majority of fixtures. So like, I suppose you've got to take the rough with the smooth, haven't you? But yeah, it was tough. And you know, when I went for my operation and I went to France for my knee up, and Michael O'Neill, actually the staff were in Lyon at the time looking at base camps for the Euros as well. Yeah. So they actually came and seen me in the hospital when I was getting my operation, and you know, Michael came in first, and it was sad, like, because you know, he was got it for me, I think, as well, because I had a really good relationship with him, and he I think it upset him as much as it did me, to be totally honest. And then the physio came in, and like the medical team in Northern Ireland were absolutely brilliant with me for in the lead up to when I did my knee, and then when I came back afterwards, they couldn't do enough for me, like, and you know, just good people as well. And it was disappointing to miss out on that experience with them and be about the place, but you know, obviously I got to go to the games, and you know, that's something that might not happen for Northern Ireland for another X amount of years. So it was nice to be involved in some shape or form. Yeah.
Your last game for West Brom, you scored to help seal promotion to the Premier League. I mean, you really had some effect. Was that your last game?
No, I never scored.
Did you not? I thought you scored in your last game.
No.
Must have been a lookalike.
It was me. No, flip me, I haven't scored for about 10 years. I think the last game, like, obviously I'd not played much at all under Slaven, and I was a bit... It got, and then obviously the big COVID break as well, and I had a good look at what I thought I was going to do next the following season, because I didn't really expect to play for West Brom again, to be totally honest. Like, obviously I nearly left in January. I nearly went to Stoke on the deadline day in the January with Michael as well, and that fell through last minute, and I was sort of just sat there, and I didn't play again. I played in the two FA Cup games, and then wasn't involved in any of the league games, wasn't on the bench or anything, and I thought, this is not great. Tried to look after myself as best I could in training, tried to do my best when I was around the lads as well, because obviously I was fortunate enough to be promoted twice from the Championship to the Premier League, and some of those lads had never played in the Premier League before, so you know, it was important for me and the likes of Gareth Barry and that to be around that and help them too. But then obviously when COVID hit, and I think we had 7 weeks off training at all, we were all, obviously the world was locked down, we were at home training and stuff, and I thought, right, I've got some gym stuff in my house, I've got took some poles and stuff from the training ground, and did set up some drills in the back garden, and tried to do everything that the club sent through fitness wise.
Brilliant.
Had a good go. I got myself in really good nick, actually. That's probably the best. I'm thinking that if the season starts again, then the next season will come around quickly and I'll be ready to go again. And then wasn't involved in the first couple of games after lockdown when there was no fans obviously in the stadium, and then I think they got off to a bit of a slow start, didn't we, West Brom? They drew with Blues. I think drew 0-0 with Blues, and then scrambled over the line against somebody else, and we were training one day, and we do 11v11 the day before the game, the lads that are playing play, and they do set pieces and stuff like that, and the gaffer said to me, I hurt my knee. Just, we played Villa in a closed doors game, hurt my knee in a sort of 11v11 practice at the stadium one day, missed a couple of weeks, we played Man United at Old Trafford in a closed doors game, missed that, and then Gaffer, obviously I wasn't fit for the Birmingham game, and I've gone back into training, and we were doing set pieces after the game, and he said, would you go and take a few set pieces just against the team? And I was like, yeah, no worries, that's obviously I'm good at that, and I put like three or four like really decent set pieces in and caused absolute chaos, and the manager, I can remember him, he was going mad at the lads because they weren't defending them properly.
They
weren't dealing with them well. And he pulled me after training, and he goes, is your knee all right? And I was like, yeah, it's fine, yeah. And he goes, okay. And he just walked off. I was like, all right. So then the squad list came through on the text message, and I was back in the squad. So then I was on the bench for a few games, and he brought me on in the Hull game because sort of football became a bit chaotic, didn't it, when there's no fans in the stadium. So it was sort of like, it was like basketball. It was like end to end. And we were winning 2-1 against Hull, and Hull had a few chances, and and I was on about my third packet of Jaffa Cakes sitting on the bench, because that's what you do when you think you're on the bench. I'd never played, and I thought, I'm not getting on anyway, it's all right. And he goes, and he turned around, and he went, because it wasn't going well on the pitch, he goes, Chris, are you ready? And I was like, chuck my Jaffa Cakes on the floor. I was like, yeah, I'm ready, yeah. So I started half a warm-up, and he threw me on for 20 minutes, and I did well in the game, sort of settled everything down a little bit. Obviously, just being an experienced head in there, I think, probably helped. And then he did the same thing on the last night. He sort of pulled me and he said, look, I think if we need a bit of help, I'm going to put you in. I was like, oh, no problem, I'm ready to go. Like, and it was nice to be involved and on the pitch for that last game. You know, it would have been easy for him just to leave me out and say, look, thanks very much, there you go. But for us to get promoted, being on the pitch at the same time, it was nice. And I remember Ian Skidmore, the media director, nice said kid. He said that at the time. He said, look, I'm absolutely delighted we got promoted, but he said, I'm delighted that you were on the pitch for it as well, which is obviously, it's nice. It's sort of for the people around the excuse me, the staff at the training ground and stuff.
And your relationship with the fans as well, by the way.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, look, it would have been much better if there had been 28,000 people in there. Yeah,
how tough to leave as a footballer? We always see the glory and stuff, but how tough is it to deal with, to know you're no longer wanted?
Yeah, I mean, look. I wasn't daft. I knew there probably wasn't going to be anything else for me there. I hadn't played all season. I think I played 8 games in the entire season, and you know, it's not as if even you were getting thrown on for 10-15 minutes at the end. Like, I wasn't involved at all. And I think, you know, for obviously a club's got to move on eventually, haven't they? Like, you know, I'd been there for such a long time, it's probably sort of the end of, almost like the end of an era. You know, myself, Mazza, Ben Foster, people like that, everybody sort of moves on eventually, don't they? Gareth McCauley. And look, it is what it is. You know, you can't go on forever, can you? I wish you could, but you just can't. Like, one thing I do think is, though, like, I think Slaven Bilic actually said to me on the pitch when we got promoted, like, he said, look, have a think about what you're going to do. He said, if there's nothing there for you, or you want to stay, he said, we could try and make something work. Like, you know what? Obviously, after being told that there wasn't anything there, you know, I sort of thought, nah, look, it's sort of best off closing that and just leaving it.
You don't want any sympathy job, do you?
No, I didn't want a sympathy. No, and I don't think it was, to be fair. I think he probably appreciated, because I really liked Slaven. I thought he was great.
Liked him as well, yeah.
I thought he was good at what he did. His staff were good. And look, it was his job. Look, it was a call for him to make, and he made it, and that's his job as a manager. I think as you're a bit older, you appreciate that, don't you? I mean, if I'd have been younger, I'd probably kicked off and said, why am I not playing this, that, and the other, but
it's not you.
No, and yeah, it might have been 10 years ago, but like at 35.
Go back to the start, model pro for managers.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, that's part of your team. Look, that's part of the reason I was there as well. You know, I didn't expect to play every week, like at my age, but it was what it was. And the only thing is, I think looking back on it though, after the season West Brom had in the Premier League last year, I think I probably could have helped a little bit in the Premier League, if that makes sense, just for just Premier League experience, you know, especially when maybe Sam Allardyce came in as well. You know, like he's a experienced Premier League manager. Yeah. He might need a couple of experienced Premier League players, and he didn't really have any of that in his squad.
No. Interesting. Did I read that you've got a cousin who plays ice hockey? Sean.
It's my mum's cousin.
Sean Thornton.
Yeah, he was
big star in America. Boston Bruins, Anaheim Ducks, Chicago Blackhawks, the Florida Panthers. I'm a big ice hockey man. So,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, unlike you, he was an enforcer.
He's a bruiser, yeah. I've never actually met him, to be fair. I've exchanged emails and bits and pieces with him, but you know, he does a lot of stuff for Florida Panthers now. I think he's the
behind the scenes
now.
He's
like some sort of managerial role, like. But he does a lot of work for. He's got a charity.
He's got a foundation, hasn't he?
His foundation, because my nanny's sister, they emigrated to Canada, and she used to come back and forward, and we knew her really well. It's my mum's aunt Maureen, and that's Sean's grandmother. So he does a lot of stuff for Parkinson's. She passed away with Parkinson's. So, I'm looking forward to meeting him, actually. I've
now got a quiz.
Oh,
name the other West Brom player similar with a relative who's a massive NHL player.
Absolutely no idea.
Paul Pesky Salida.
To be fair, I should have. I probably should have guessed.
His cousin is Mike Ricci, who played for. Massive star, traded for millions.
I know the name, yeah.
Yeah, it was massive.
No, look, I'm not massively into ice hockey, to be fair, but obviously when you know stuff like that. And I always remember being on holiday in America one time, and there was a guy from, I think was he from Boston? And we were chatting about him, and he was a big hockey fan, and I just dropped it in one time. And he goes, no way, you're joking. And I was like, yeah, he's my mum's cousin, like he's my second cousin. And he was like, he's not. And I was like, yeah. He said, he was brilliant. And I was like, oh, right, there you go. So yeah, I know nothing about ice hockey, but he was obviously all right.
How proud a moment for you, and also for your mum and your dad and your family, to wear that Northern Ireland jersey.
Yeah, the first time especially, I mean, it was an absolute non-event of a game. It was a friendly away to Switzerland in August, and it was
I think you scored.
No, did you not score? No, I did not score.
It was your first goal for Ireland against
San Marino away.
Oh, San Marino.
Kick, it was like, yeah. But the first game, I literally came on for about 10 minutes at the end, touched the ball twice, and it was like, there was nobody there. There was about 500 people at the game. And do you just think, like, and I was buzzing, and I was like, I can't believe I've just played for Ireland. And, you know, like, when you actually look at it back, looking at back one, actually wasn't a very good debut, was it? It was rubbish. So, but my first game was against Switzerland away, and my last game was against Switzerland away, and both games were 0-0 draws. So that sort of sums it up.
But 60-odd caps, for goodness sake. I mean, that's tremendous.
Yeah, look, I probably could have had a lot more, obviously, with the knee injury probably cost me 15 caps, I would imagine, playing at the Euros, playing all the build-up games and stuff like that. There was a spell, obviously, when we weren't doing very well, when a lot of lads, you would do anything not to go, you know, because it was tough, like, especially for the lads that were playing in the Premier League, because you're under a lot of pressure to play well for Northern Ireland. And I used to get a lot of stick because, you know, I was doing well for West Brom, and then they were like, well, why aren't you doing well for Northern Ireland? And okay, it was tough for a few seasons. It was really tough playing for Northern Ireland until Michael O'Neill took over, and then it was absolutely brilliant. Like, he turned it around. It took him probably 12 months to turn it around, but he kept us all on side, all the sort of Premier League players, you know, myself, Gareth, Johnny Evans, people like that, Stephen Davis, Aaron Hughes, and just literally, Aaron Hughes actually retired and came back to play for Michael, and that stuff like that sort of really helped, like, and that second campaign, when we just started winning game after game and just grinding out results here and there, like, you just think, you know what, actually we're doing all right. And the games became a lot more enjoyable, especially the ones in Belfast, you know, the atmosphere in Belfast.
I was going to ask you about Windsor Park.
Unbelievable atmosphere. Like, the year we qualified, the stadium hadn't been finished, it was getting refurbed, and once they got it full, some of the atmospheres are like the best for 18,000 people, like the best atmosphere you could ever come across, like, it's just constant. But obviously that comes with success as well, and you sort of, you know, it might go the other way if we're not doing too well, like, but that's football, isn't it?
I suppose just a few daft things, really. Craziest player, craziest teammate?
Jonas Olsen.
I thought Jonathan Greening would be well up there.
Nah, he's not crazy, Jono, he's just daft, isn't he? Like, but Jonas Olsen is like Jekyll and Hyde, like, you know, like, he was angry, brilliant, happy, depressed, all in the space of about 2 minutes, like, you know, it's just mental, like, and he got no spatial awareness.
What a teammate, though, to have him inside. Great.
Yeah, look, and obviously when the chips are down, you know, he's got your back. And then, like, I think we had a good group of lads like that, though, didn't we? Like, you know, obviously, yeah, I just touched tremendous. On it before, Fozzie, Boaz, you know, obviously didn't play as much as Fozzie, but he was part of the squad. Gareth, Mazza, Youssef Malumbu, people like that, like, just loads of people like that. We had a good group of players, but you're honest, yeah, by far and away, like, a lot of lads will probably tell you the same thing. Absolutely mental.
Who was the worst dressed?
Let me ask a few candidates for that. They might say me, to be fair. I'm pretty basic. Like, I just like the tracksuit and a pair of trainers just to get in and out. Like, but I'd imagine probably some of the foreign lads, you know, so obviously different cultures bring different dress senses, don't they? Like, you know.
Who's your favourite manager?
Probably Roy Hodgson, yeah. Like, well, definitely.
Because he changed your
definitely
career.
Roy. Yeah, look, he made us all Premier League players, you know, and consistent Premier League players, which is...
So, any manager you were not struck on?
Pepe Mel had a tough time.
It was tough for him, to be fair,
wasn't
it?
Tough for him as well, but yeah, I think, look, the whole scenario of when he came in, the squad he inherited after Alan Irvine, who was really unlucky, like, you know, we didn't have a good enough squad for it, and then we came in and tried to reinvent the wheel halfway through the season, and you just can't do that in the Premier League. And I just think, you know, once, like, footballers, as much as they get they're not daft, like, you know, after two or three training sessions you can see what's going to happen, and we could see very quickly that wasn't going to work out, like. And, you know, I wasn't overly keen on Tony Pulis neither, to be totally honest, but I think he's one of the people that probably didn't care what I thought about him, like, you know. And
he is Marmite, isn't he? Yeah, you love him or don't like him.
But I think I could cope, like, it wasn't even that, you know, obviously the fans will complain about the way he played football and stuff like that, and that never really bothered me, you know, like, obviously it would be nice to play free-form football, but at the end of the day, if your team's not good enough to play
you do
what you have to do to win games. So I was happy enough, like, playing, and the one season when Matt Phillips and Nasser Chadli in that time, we actually played some really good football, and we did really well. But I just as a fella, I think he didn't, you know, just the way he was around.
Hard to warm to. Let's be honest, he's hard to warm to.
I think so, and I think, but that's maybe part of the way he gets on, because, you know, at the end of the day, the football managers have a short shelf life, don't they? You probably don't want to become too attached to people, like, just in case. And like, he's, I just find him difficult, yeah.
Who's the best player you've played with and the best player you've played against?
Well, there's loads against, isn't there? Like, you know, you could pick anyone. Lampard, Drogba from that Chelsea team. Giggs scores Ronaldo from that Man United team.
Oh, dear.
But I was fortunate enough, obviously, to be able to play against players like this. And, you know, that man, any one of the Man City team, like, you know, if you went to Man City and got beat 3-0, you were sort of like, oh, well, that wasn't too bad, actually, you know. So
I remember David Silva having a wonderful game against West Brom. He was my favourite.
He was one of the best, David Silva, yeah, I think. And, you know, obviously Gareth Barry and Julian Lescott and people, when they come, just say how good he is, like, and, you know, that he's definitely up there, like, but, yeah, like, obviously Ronaldo when he's at Man United as well, like, you know, I was fortunate enough to play against a lot of good players, so it's hard to pick one from them. Teammates is difficult as well. Like, I think James Morrison's always up there. Anybody that ever speaks, Mazza was such a good
8 out of 10 every
week. He was
a
good player, and, yeah, you know, his injuries obviously towards the back end of his career really killed him. You know, he lost that little bit of spark, that half a yard that got him past people that he was so good at before. But, yeah, look, there's been a lot of Ben Foster, obviously, as a goalie. And then you've got you look at Gareth McCauley, people like that coming in the Premier League at 31.
Gareth McCauley,
like,
I mean,
on a different scale, you know, he's probably one of them that doesn't really, you know, you don't think he's nowhere. There's no frills, is there? Like, he just went in, did his job every week, and he was.
But amongst his teammates, he'd be rated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and when he wasn't in the team, you knew straight away, because I think the first couple of games when Pepe Mel came in, he played Diego Lugano instead of him, and you could just tell straight away that, like, he was how much Gareth was missed. So, like, we never really had many superstars, did we? We just had good, solid pros, and I think that made us the team we were.
Nothing wrong with that either, by the way. Who's your toughest opponent?
a few bad days.
Who's give you a tough time?
Wilfred Zaha gave me a tough day one day when I was down at Crystal Palace. I think Tony Pulis, the manager, I was playing left back, and he was playing wide right.
Well, all the best.
And Johnny Evans was playing inside me at left centre half. I was left back, and he just kept getting 1v1 with me, and I was like, I don't want to be here at all. Like, I can't remember what happened. First, the ball dropped to me on the edge of the box, and it's sort of between me and him. And I went to shoot from a free kicker corner, and he's caught me he sort of blocked me off, and I've split my nose after about 2 minutes in the game. So I was like, and he didn't. It was an accident. Like, he didn't do it on purpose. And he's come over and he's apologised, and then for the rest of the game he just absolutely ragged me all over. I gave away a penalty in about 5 minutes to go. Tried to tackle him. He did a step over and passed me, fouled him, gave away a penalty. And that was it. I was just like, and Johnny Evans came up to me afterwards. He said, forget about that. He said, he's one of the best 1v1s I've ever seen. Like, because obviously he played with him at Man United. But we were going away with internationals the next day, and Michael O'Neill had been to the game. And I'd turned up with stitches in my nose. And he just looked at me and he just laughed. And he goes, didn't have a great day yesterday, did you? And I was like, no. And he just started laughing. He said, oh, well, it's gone now.
So, what makes you laugh?
I'm pretty easy going, Tom. Like, lots of stuff. My youngest kid makes me laugh massively. He's mental. He's a funny boy. That's probably it. Just, I wouldn't say I've got a massive group of friends. Like, but like the ones I do, you try to surround. You try to surround yourself with people you enjoy spending time with.
Yeah,
you pals and stuff. And I watch a lot of TV. Got a few friends on TV, always makes me laugh, you know, like the TV programme. I like stuff like that. Like, so
please don't tell me you watch Love Island.
I don't watch Love Island, not at all.
God.
Absolutely not.
Thank
no.
Goodness.
No way.
What scares you most?
Good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. Probably what's going to happen to your kids in the future. That's probably what scares me the most. Yeah,
family.
It's probably the same as any parent. Yeah. You
never stop worrying.
You never. No. Well, so I believe. Everybody keeps telling me the same things. You know. Yeah. That's probably the. No, you've got your own family. You worry about what's going to happen to them. What's going to be best for them. Like, that's probably. I'm pretty laid back, easy going. Not too much bothers me, to be totally honest. But that would definitely be the one.
Are you going to be a coach, a manager? Is that your ambition? Do you want to be?
I don't really know. I'm going to do my coaching stuff. I'm going to try and keep going with the bits and pieces at West Brom. And I'm going to get doing my pro licence at the minute. I did my A licence a few years back in Belfast, so I'm on the pro licence at the minute. So I'm going to get it out of the way and then just take it from there. I think at the minute, where my head's at, probably not full-time at the minute. I quite enjoy my own time.
You've had 20 years, haven't you? Exactly, training non-stop. So.
But I think I'm also wary of, you know, if you're out of the game for a long time, you're easily forgotten. You know, I think there is that as well. But look, I think my kids are 13 and 10, and I've been away with football for their entire lives. You know, every other weekend I've been away. International breaks, I've been away. It's nice to have a constant for them as well, and for my wife as well, who's obviously, you know, she's from Belfast too, and we don't have a lot of family or anything over here. Like, you know, a lot of times she's been on her own for that amount of time too. So it's important for me that I'm there to help with stuff like that she's obviously had to do for the last 20 years.
I was going to ask you what your guilty pleasure is, but I know it's golf, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah, massively golf.
What do you play off?
Seven.
Ooh.
I've got down, that last season.
Is that seven or seven?
No, it's pretty... Seven. I think my official 6.7, but that obviously with that new weird handicap system, it's usually translate to 7 or 8. But I think that last season at West Brom really helped my golf because I wasn't playing football, so I had to find something to do. So,
are you a music man?
Yeah, I like music. I like going to gigs and
Who's
stuff.
Who's your favourite band?
I'm pretty general, like Snow Patrol, Kings of Leon, teams that people like that. Like
Good
so,
taste, Snow Patrol.
Yeah, just. Just little things, you know. I've got a few other ones. I really like the Eagles as well. Mum and dad sold me on the Eagles.
I went to their reunion at the NEC a few years back.
I went to Wembley to see them last year. Took my mum and dad for their, it was mum and dad's 60th, so I took them to Wembley when they were there last
year. Did you sit there like we did I didn't realise that's so many hits.
Every song is an absolute classic, isn't it? That's probably that might be one of my guilty pleasures as well, the Eagles. Actually, you know, at my age people are like, the Eagles, and I said, yeah.
Any regrets?
No, not football wise anyway. No, obviously disappointment not playing for Northern Ireland in the European Championships. Regrets, one regret, the playoff semi-final against Villa a couple of years ago when I that second yellow card, that's a big, I don't know whether it's a regret, because obviously what happens, doesn't it? But I think looking back on it, I was disappointed because it let all the lads down. Like, you know, obviously when Jimmy Sham was caretaker as well, we'd actually play quite well in the evening. But I think on that season as a whole, we probably should never have been in the playoffs anyway. We had more than enough to get promoted. So, you know, definitely that. I mean, obviously if you could turn back time, you wouldn't make the same decisions, would you? But I'd like to think for majority of the time I made majority decent decisions based on the scenario.
Chris, it's been I can't believe it's over an hour. Amazing. It's been absolutely fantastic. Thanks for joining us.
No, pleasure.
Thanks
absolutely.
Very much indeed. It's Chris Brunt. It's been fascinating. We'd love you to leave a review for us. Good, bad or indifferent. If you don't like it, tell us. If you love it, tell us. Whatever you do, leave a review on the platform that your podcast is on. Until the next time, thanks very much indeed.